the devil's advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, we welcome back a fine guest and a friend of ours. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Mike, good to be with you once again on a day that the Attorney General finally gets his homework in.
Better late than never, Jim. Thanks for joining us.
I'm going to defer that whole...
Late last night.
that's really been Dom's big issue. Let me ask you, I went on a little insurrectionist field trip today. Attorney Eric Cardall came to the Wisconsin State Capitol and made some representations. It's going to be a lawsuit. They're still suing over the Facebook money, the Zuckerberg money that apparently came into the state of Wisconsin. But Jim, I know I'm catching you off the cuff here. Does the name Eric Cardall, is that familiar? Had a little run-in with the federal court recently, sort of got an ethics complaint filed. I wondered if you had opinions on him, sir.
No, I do not. I know the name. I've seen the report, but do not have a great deal of background expertise. I would note once again that without imputing the specifics of this particular lawsuit, these folks who continue to go around and advocating for various claims, those kinds of things, tend to move from subject matter to subject matter. This may be the latest in his romp, if you will, through these kinds of cases.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet the snake oil salesman today. Quite unimpressive.
You weren't buying Curdy?
He was like Lynn Wood without the charisma, if you know what I'm saying. but I'm going to let Dom ask you the important questions, Jim.
Well, Jim, it was 3 weeks ago, Judge Amy Berman Jackson, a federal judge, ordered the Department of Justice to release the memo on which Bill Barr, when he was Attorney General, claimed he relied on to make his decision to not charge President Donald Trump with obstruction. And so it was supposed to be out like a week ago, and finally they asked for an extension, which I didn't hear about. And finally, they released like portions of it. Now, this is a new DOJ, a new administration. Jim, my initial reaction, I told you I was getting a little pissed off about this. I feel like, you know, the DOJ is covering up for the last DOJ, because hell, they're all DOJ. Jim, what's your impression and what can you tell us?
Sure. A couple of things here, a process point and a substantive view, which again may surprise you, probably will not, because again, I find myself pretty much in your same camp on the substance of this, Dom. The process point is that plainly, as you indicated, this took a while inside the Department of Justice for them to come to this decision. As you indicated, the homework was due a week ago, Monday, was late, and finally gets in at about 10:45, 11 o'clock Eastern time last night, when we were in communication about this very issue. So what that says to me by way of process is there was, and perhaps continues to be, a lot of discussion inside the Department of Justice about what to do in this circumstance, which is good. That's deliberation. My strong feeling is that there was probably dissent and a lot of disagreement about what to do here. Reasonable people can, in fact, disagree, which leads me to my second point, which is that with due respect to this Attorney General, with due respect, I'm concerned that this reliance, which is apparently the reason for appealing on precedent, and frankly, the slippery slope idea, is one that I also don't embrace here. I've never been a big fan of this notion that because you make a decision here, it binds you, it takes you down a slippery slope, and you always need to do the same down the road. I think what's going on here is the department is saying, gosh, if we don't appeal this, any internal deliberative memorandums that are generated, whether they're FOIA requests or otherwise, we're going to have to release those too. I've never been a big fan of that. I've never been someone who said that, gosh, because this circumstance prompts a difficult decision, it necessarily dictates what happens down the road. And finally, get to my substantive point, which again finds me in agreement with you. I think, with due respect, this is the wrong decision. I think you can, in fact, make the compelling argument that this, I went back and you look at the Pentagon Papers way back in 1971. You had a situation there when, again, you had the government plainly, a document from Daniel Ellsberg indicating that the government had lied to us about what the Vietnam War was about from 1945 to 1967. Again, lots of litigation there involving the Supreme Court. The document comes out because it is so unusual, it's so atypical, And like this situation, as Amy Berman Jackson has told us a couple of weeks ago, they're misrepresentations, not only by the attorney general initially, but this memorandum codifies that both in terms of process and substance. I think there's a reason to carve this out and say, this is a historical event in American history that America should know about. And I'm disappointed that the attorney general and the Department of Justice has made this decision.
So, and ultimately, Judge Amy Berman Jackson could deny the appeal and force the release anyway. And I look at this, Jim, in some regards like an attorney-client privilege kind of situation. But when you're discussing a crime, you know, you don't get to keep that secret. You lose that privilege. And I kind of, maybe it's not a great analogy, Jim, but that's how I kind of look at this. All right, so they decided to release some information. Jim, did you happen to look at it? What was your takeaway of what they allowed us to see?
Sure. It's about a 9-page memorandum altogether. It is not very satisfying, I suspect, to either one of you and to your listeners as well. It basically, it's about 2 pages, contains some bureaucratic explanations of what's going on here. It's introductory. It does not include the all-important section where Trump's conduct was analyzed through a prosecution decision-making rubric, if you will. So again, using a lot of that toner from all of our times of the Mueller report, all that, those blacked out pages, that's what you've got here again, not a whole lot of insight. And again, I go back to what you just mentioned again, Amy Berman Jackson looked at all of this. And what did she say a couple of weeks ago? She said, you know what, the attorney general's characterization of what he hardly had time to skim, much less study closely, prompted immediate reaction as politicians and otherwise responded badly to this. She said the fact that he would not be prosecuted, that is meaning President Trump at the time, was a given. She has looked at this memorandum and she has said that, to your point about there being, whether it's a crime or certainly a misrepresentation, she says it's there. And she says that, you know, under these circumstances, she also knows what this deliberative process exception is under FOIA. She understands that. She's been a judge, a government employee for a long period of time. She looks at this and she says, you know what, those principles shouldn't apply here, where, to your point, you've got somebody who's dissembling, who's being misrepresenting what the process was here, and the American public should see this. So I'm hopeful that when this goes up to the Court of Appeals, which it will, from Amy Berman Jackson, regrettably, Don, we won't see anything for probably about a year or so. So put this in your file down the road here. But I'm hopeful the Court of Appeals will look at this and say, this is something atypical. This is not your normal deliberative process, pre-decisional type memorandum that would otherwise prevent it from being disclosed. That's the basis upon which the Attorney General right now is saying we're going to appeal Amy Berman Jackson's opinion.
My final question on this topic, Jim, is it possible that the OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel, who, you know, long ago came out with this idea that you can't prosecute a sitting president, that they were involved in some of this, let's call it wrongdoing or misrepresentation?
You know, we don't know. I mean, a lot of those things are, again, going to come out over the course of the next several years. We certainly know the OLC memorandum long predated the Trump administration itself. But there's no doubt that whether it's this decision of just the past few days, prior decisions about deliberative process, it's not unusual for the Attorney General to reach out to many, many different units inside the Department of Justice to get consultation, to get advice. And if those offices are not staffed with people who understand the seriousness of what they're doing, their service on behalf of the American public, that their role is something beyond, should be never political, but beyond politics, beyond partisanship, then we have trouble. And so we don't know exactly whether OLC was involved, their extent of their involvement in this past administration, but there certainly is an awful lot of reason to be concerned about generally the way in which decisions were made inside the last administration. This memorandum reveals that, and that's my point. Historically now and historically down the road, this is not your normal document. I concur with Amy Berman Jackson with due humility here. I'm hoping the Court of Appeals will look at this and say, you know what, this is something atypical. Let's release it and direct the Attorney General to do so.
Our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, I got to ask you, I've already waited and waited and waited for the testimony of Don McGahn. In my understanding, the former White House counsel under Trump will give testimony next week. Jim, will that be public testimony? Am I going to get my satisfaction, sir?
You won't have to wait a year like you will for the Barr memorandum, but it appears that he's testifying not in public, not in an open forum as we normally would expect, The reporting on this indicates that there will be some strict limits. That includes that there, but there will be a transcription of his testimony made, some opportunities for everybody to look at that and make certain it's accurate. It's going to be several weeks, not months, not years. And so my sense is you should mark your calendar probably for mid-June or so by the time you see the testimony. We'll plainly need to take a look at that when that comes out. Interestingly, once again, I, as I always do, pull up the Mueller report and just note one of the things he'll testify about is he says in the Mueller report he was concerned about having any role in asking the acting attorney general to fire the special counsel before he had given up his views about what he should do here. McGahn considered the president's request to fire the special counsel to be an inflection point. He wanted to hit the brakes. He recalled feeling trapped because he did not plan to follow the president's directive, did not know what he would say the next time the president called. That's just a few sentences from presumably Don McGahn will be telling us next week in behind closed doors, and then to you, Dom, probably again several weeks after that. This will be interesting to hear it come out of his mouth, something again for America to be digesting seriously.
Jim, I heard a new term, new to me at least, and since we're having this conversation and revisiting the Mueller report, let's revisit Manafort for just a minute. Manafort, new news about Kilimnyak and the fact that Manafort shared specific internal polling data with a Russian operative. And Jim, of course, he was effectively pardoned of his crimes. And here's my question. The new term, I just scribbled it down like I'm Sarah Palin here. It's on my hand. A corrupt pardon. Can you help me understand this concept, and could it affect Mr. Manafort? Could his pardon ever be revisited because of the corrupt nature of the pardon?
Yeah, it's a tough thing to do. I think that the Constitution, most people read it saying a pardon is a pardon is a pardon. Once it's done, it's done. But I think the notion itself, as we have discussed from time to time, of there being a corruptly gotten, a corruptly conveyed pardon is a possibility out there. If you've gotten this pardon as a result of criminal conduct, if certainly the worst case scenario would be someone pays you, the president or some staff person to accomplish this, if there's some other quid pro quo that's criminal in nature that gets you there, there could certainly be a prosecution for obstruction, for criminal behavior that prompts the issuance of the pardon in the first place. That's not to say that we look at the pardon today and say, gosh, because it's done, it's a good one. This Kilimnyak issue, which you describe again, this is way back in April. Treasury Department comes out and says, you know what, Bob Mueller was right. That Kilimnyak and Manafort were together, and Kilimnyak is receiving sensitive information on polling and campaign strategy directly from Paul Manafort. What does that go to? That goes to the first large section of this report, the Mueller report. It goes to collusion. It goes to conspiracy. Mueller is saying, you know what? I can't quite find a conspiracy here. That Treasury report that ties the campaign to Kilimnyak and the campaign data, what is the purpose of that? That's a part of the conspiracy that Bob Mueller was hinting at, did not find, but I suspect that he had this information that the Treasury report is now disclosing. His conclusions in this report, although tepid in the second section, might have been a little bit more profound, a little more direct. And so the longer this goes on, the more we find out about this. This is the latest shoe that drops about the connection between the campaign, Paul Manafort, and Russians by virtue of this Russian intelligence operative named Konstantin Kilimnyak.
Are the American people, and Jim, we're basically out of time, but are the American people ever going to see a connecting of the dots, a Mueller report 2.0, something of that sort?
I think so. I think as academics look at this, and again, we have more reports like this, more internal government issue reports, those kinds of things. We'll see more of that, and it gives us not only a better historical sense of what just happened, but how future governments should work when it comes to these kinds of situations where you've got people in positions of responsibility who are not acting on behalf of the best interests of the American people.
Well, James, now our mutual friend Dominic has life purpose. Write the book, Dom! Jim Santel, thank you so much for joining us here on the Devil's Advocates today. I'm sure we'll call you again soon, Jim.
I will look forward to that.
Always a pleasure. Come back with us. I'll introduce you to more Trumpster friends Crudy made earlier today.
The only reason you get pardoned is you committed a crime.
Well, history's written by the winner, so it largely depends on who's writing the history.